Please note that World HD posts on social media may include statements concerning financial market trends and are based on current market conditions, which will fluctuate and may be superseded by subsequent market event. The investment strategies and broad themes discussed in World HD live streams, recordings, and social media posts may be unsuitable for certain investors depending on their specific investment objectives and financial situation. Information and data contained in posts and on live streams have been obtained from sources believed and checked to be reliable, but not guaranteed. You should note that the materials on the social media platforms are provided as is, without any express or implied warranties. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investments involve a degree of risk, including the risk of loss. Any comments made in the materials are opinions with no guarantee that any expressed course of events will actually transpire, and no compensation has been paid to any person providing a testimonial or comments.
Good morning, live from America on Rumble X. Through the LFA TV full day live stream that runs actually from 8 a.m. starting with this show until 11 p.m. at night with live content. Today is Thursday, August 14th, 2025. We are World HD every weekday at 8 a.m. And good morning, Frankie.
Great to be here, Craig. Great to see this beautiful audience waking up nice and early for us. We always appreciate it. Bill Robbins, MacGyver, Trumpet, Crispy Critters, we love you. A little quiet this morning, actually, but we love you.
Well, we got some fire today.
Let's go.
We'll get you going. Right, we'll get you going. We got some fire to throw today. All right.
We're bringing the boom today, all right?
Yep. And let's do it. Let's just go ahead and kick off, Frankie. Let's run this clip here with, this is Rick Rieder of BlackRock. Okay, so he's the top bond guy for BlackRock, but he also kind of comes across to the stock side. So we got bonds and equities. He's on the bond side, but he'll crisscross over to the equity side. This is one of their brightest minds in terms of the investment side of their business. We got Larry Fink, we got a couple other people at the management level. This guy's at the investment side, but I think he's out pounding the pavement for an agenda here. Let's roll this one.
I tell you, you sent me an email earlier. I had to do a double take. You said this is the best investment environment ever.
I think that.
You mean that?
I do, and by the way, it doesn't mean necessarily everything's going up. But there's a couple of things at play that are pretty extraordinary. First of all, if you take the equity side, first of all, the technicals and equities are crazy. I know we've talked about it before. Amount of cash on the sideline, the amount of buybacks relative to the IPO calendar, i.e. the demand versus supply, is pretty extraordinary.
All right. Okay, good. So we're back. All right. So today is Thursday, and for us, that means equity day. And that's what we're doing, right? We're going to look at the equities. We're going to look at it. He's saying the stock market, best investment economy he's ever seen. All right. Later on, we're going to run through some of this stuff. There's also a lot of money sitting in money market funds. We've also talked about this private equity. We're not going to get to that today, but we will get to that. That's going to be our top agenda for tomorrow, is to get to this private equity. And so today what we want to do is go through this, take a look at these markets, take a look at what's going on, take a look at Scott Bessent, a few other things that he was out saying yesterday. And again, continue to try to put this picture together. And with that, I'd say, what do you think, Frankie? Let's go over and look at some economic data, get it rolling here.
Let's do it. What do we
all
got?
Right,
we got core PPI coming out, or unemployment?
Yeah, we got a few things today. So again, for those of you who haven't been with us, we'll take a quick look at the overview for this week, the economic data. So again, not much on Monday, but we were watching China. And what did we see? That first time in 20-some years, right, they actually had a negative new loan situation. So China's hurting. We saw some good data come out of the UK today. We'll take a look at that in a second. But how are they getting this? A lot of deficit spending, okay? And then we've got Japan. Japan has been very quiet, but I'm trying to get out front of it because I think there are things going on there. And we had Scott Bessent out yesterday doing the rounds, talking about rate cuts, peddling, you know, the rate cuts for the President Trump's administration. And I don't think that they're wrong, and we're going to get to that. The misleading data, how this actually has a trickle effect through the system. We're going to get a good look at how Scott Bessent thinks about this today with one of these clips, how he thinks about why this data, why the manipulation of the data really has an impact from a narrative perspective. And I think he pretty much comes out and calls it. Okay, so then we had the CPI data out on Tuesday. One other thing, the Royal Bank of Australia kept rates the same. Only reason that matters is because what we're going to see today is we're also going to talk about Japan. Scott Bessent is encouraging Japan to actually raise rates. So if the world's going down and they're lowering rates, but Japan's got to go the other direction, raise rates, this is one of the first times we've seen this happen in a long time. About 1 year ago, we saw the carry trade blow up, which means What that is people, these hedge funds, right, the big financiers around the world, they go in and they go to the cheapest place they can get debt. Okay, so they take their currency, they take their investments, they run over to Japan, low interest rates for a long period of time, since late early 1990s all the way until recently. They go over there, they go to Japan, they borrow a bunch of money, right? They play these games with the overnight lending market, repo market, leverage this stuff up. And then they go around the rest of the world and they get into private equity, they get into some public markets, right? They get into all these investments. And it's a way to fund their investments, right? So it's a way to amplify their returns. Okay, we don't see those returns because we can't play in that game, right? Unless you have a lot of money, right? Well, some of us can, right? Some of you probably can, but the vast majority of people can't play in that game, right? You have to be a qualified, eligible participant. You have to be have experience. You have to be willing to sign these private placement memorandums. You have to know people first. That's the other thing. You have to know the right people to. So you got to probably be have some connection to DC and the, you know, that whole operation. So again, so we don't really get to play in that game, all right? But that's what we're seeing, right? That's an underlying trend for this week, is trying to see, like, the U.S. is talking about lowering rates, and yet Scott Bessent is telling Japan to raise rates, all right? So what's behind that? Royal Bank of Australia held rates, probably going to be lowering rates along with everyone else in time, okay? We see a little bit of weakness in the German economic data this week on Tuesday. Then we roll into Wednesday. We get the German 10-year note auction. Watching these bond markets to see, like, will the market absorb this debt that the governments keep putting out? Okay, and so far it's not bad, but you see little cracks in the but nothing major. All right, so that's kind of Wednesday crude oil inventories. We'll look at that here in a second, and then we'll recap that from yesterday here in a second. Then we get Thursday. We had some decent data out of the UK, a big swath of data. I don't know if we'll take a. We'll cover at least two of the things on that, okay? And then China, right? Back to China. China industrial production, I think that comes out late tonight, and I want to see what happens there. Again, we're seeing this China thing fall apart. We see the 90-day extension, right, with the tariffs on China. Why? Just keep delaying. Let China deal with their own mess instead of giving them a bailout. At some point, what's going to happen is President Xi is going to say, hey, we need to have a meeting and we need to try to get this thing ironed out. But it's better that they come to us versus us going to them. There's been a couple meetings, right? Remember down in Geneva, in Switzerland, there was a meeting, and they had one in London. Then they had another round. I can't remember. I think maybe up at the up somewhere up in Norway. Anyway, they've had multiple meetings, but again, no real traction on the China front. To finish out this week, we get core retail sales on Friday, Empire State Manufacturing, and that kind of wraps this week up. All right, so let's recap what happened yesterday in terms of economic data. So we had this China new loans. First time in 15 years that we had a negative read on that data. Okay, it was expected to come in at $305 billion. It comes in at minus 50. First time, right, since a data series comes out. I don't know, it might be longer than 25 or 30 years. It might go way back, but that's the data we have. So it's pretty much the lowest read in the data that we have, which is pushing like 20 some years. All right, then we had this German 10-year note auction, a little bit worse. The yield came down. Actually, the yield actually went up slightly from 2.62 to 2.69. And the bid to cover went down a little bit, meaning a slight reduction in the number of people showing up to buy that debt. Okay, we had a few FOMC speakers out yesterday out of the US. I forget the names. I think we had Goolsbee, Barkin, Bostic. I think those were the three that were out. No big news, but again, continuing that trend of lowering rates in the U.S., all right? And we're going to get into what that means today, all right? Crude oil inventories were expected at 0.9. They came in at 3 million barrels, so that's a supply build. If we get a chance, we'll take a look at crude oil today. It's kind of following with what we talked about, right? We're looking at that 63.18. We're looking at that new harmonic structure. Right now, crude oil sits below everything. The 79.37 that came from the Israel stand down on the Hamas invasion, it's sitting below the 63.18 level that kind of piggybacks off that whole Middle East war controversy, Israel, all the things Israel's been stirring up across the Middle East, right? The multiple, you know, threats of shutting down the Strait of Hormuz, the Red Sea, you know, these tensions where we, you know, every once in a while we hear crude oil is going to $300 a barrel, right? That's what we're talking about, right? These fears, the fear that's put out in the media to scare everyone that something's going to happen and crude oil is going to go through the roof. But we just keep saying, like, look, the pressure's to the downside on this crude oil. And right now, all things are go to the downside. Doesn't mean we jump in, you know, head first. It just means that the situation is there for a sideways to down situation, where if we can get into that with something like a bear put spread, and I keep coming back to that, where we can just do it over and over and over again and turn it into an income strategy and just let the thing go sideways to down, let it drift. I don't think we're going to see like a big sell-off, and I don't think, you know, we could see a big rally, some fear again. That's why we limit the downside. We limit the upside by doing that, but that's okay because it's just a numbers game. We're trying to get it right eight out of 10 times, knowing that one time out of those 10, it's going to blow up, but we've already got our limited loss built in and so forth. All right, so that's kind of the takeaway on the crude oil. Then we have President Trump speaking again today. He was out yesterday speaking at the Kennedy, the Kennedy Performing Arts, Frankie, I think it was. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And he came out, and it was kind of a talking about George Strait and some of the musical artists and things like that. But then it turned into, of course, the questions always turn into Russia and, you know, the National Guard in D.C. and so forth. So I don't know. I didn't watch the whole thing. Did you happen to catch it all, Frankie, or did you?
No, I didn't. I saw it in the background running on the news, but I didn't see anything on that yet. All good.
Yeah.
I know they were asking about Ukraine and Russia, right?
Yeah.
Classic.
Yep. And that's what we thought. We thought that would be, you know, it's not hard to figure out that would be one of the questions that he gets asked and he's got to answer. And again, I think he came out and he said something like, the question was, if Russia doesn't cooperate in this round of negotiations, do you think there will be sanctions? And he said, basically, President Trump said, absolutely, we'll hit them hard. You know, so that was kind of the takeaway from that particular question. All right. Australian unemployment came in about as expected, slightly down. The reason we're watching this is because we saw that terrible number come out of Canada last week where they were expecting a positive growth in jobs, and it just got crushed. You know, it's very significant down move in the Canadian employment situation. Two commodity currencies. Australia is a big commodity currency that feeds a lot into China, the rest of the world. Canada is a big commodity country and currency that feeds into the U.S. and other places around the world. That's why those two, that's a big common thread between those two. Okay, today's data. We've got the big data point today is the core PPI, the producer price index, and that'll come out at 8:30. We'll cover that. And but here's a couple numbers out of the UK, sort of surprising. There's a whole swath of them. There's probably 8 to 10 numbers that came out, but these are the two good ones. So I'm going to give the UK the benefit of the doubt. There were some negative ones in there, but these are big beats, right? The UK GDP month over month was expected at 0.2, came in at 0.4. So that's a big coup for UK to pull that off. Again, are the numbers real? I don't know. We'll see over time. Sort of an outlier. This is a big, big number. Then we see industrial production month over month expected at 0.3%, came in at 0.7. So again, totally giving the benefit of the doubt to the UK today on those two numbers, because we could pick apart some other things that weren't so good. All right, then we get our producer price index out at 8:30. The reason this matters is that this is upstream of the consumer price index. So if we get a 0.2 or lower read on this, that means that it puts pressure. The concept is that will carry through to the CPI next month. And remember, we have two CPI data reads between the last Fed rate meeting and the next Fed rate meeting in September. So again, the Fed sits there and they say they're so data dependent, and this is what they're looking for is data, but I don't really think I think it's a scam, right? I think their data dependency, that's why they have 3,000, 5,000, 8,000 economists. It's why they need this bigger building, right, that's way over budget. President Trump was talking about that yesterday. I think he may have covered that when he was at that Kennedy thing. I caught a little bit of that where he's like, that project at the Fed he could have done it for $25 million. He said the reason that this thing has such big cost overruns is that they're trying to build a basement next to the Potomac, and you can't, you know, you can't pump that water out of there fast enough. I mean, it's going to just, you can't fight Mother Nature, right? You can try all you want, but you're talking about a major river and you're trying to fight that. And that's essentially what they're doing, is putting a basement in, underground parking, and they're trying to, you know, wall that off so that it doesn't flood. And that's part of the big cost overruns, according to President Trump. So we asked for that, right, Frankie? We asked for, like, what's the breakdown? Why the overruns? I wish they would have done that the day when they were sitting in front of Jerome Powell.
Right.
But that would have been a great time to see it, right?
Yeah. With the hard hats on, that'd be a good time.
and call him out, but also, like, you know, explain to us at the time. I just felt like we walked out of that day empty-handed without a lot of information. It was a big to-do, right? It was a big scene. And it was, you know, great for the TV screens and stuff, but it really wasn't good for the you know, to really explain things to us about what was going on. Now we get it, but we got to piecemeal it together. And that's a shame in my mind that we didn't get that. Okay, another thing we're looking at is these mortgage delinquencies. We're talking about the housing, okay? We're going to get into the housing today, I hope, right? We got every intention of getting into the housing. We're going to get into it or around it for sure. How deep we get into it, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see here. Okay, then we get natural gas storage. We're watching natural gas again. Crude oil to the downside, natural gas to the upside. That's why we watch this stuff. Can we get natural gas to bounce? Natural gas is kind of hanging by a thread here. We got to keep a close eye on it, right? If it doesn't hold in this particular area, we got to start thinking about trimming and waiting if someone has a long position in natural gas. Everything, even though everything looked great for natural gas, the whole story for natural gas looks great. And all it really takes is like it just takes one catalyst, right? One catalyst, and it'll turn this natural gas market, right, and get it turned to the upside. There's buyers wanting to come into this. Everybody's trying to get the best deal I think they can get right now, right? They're letting it come in. Any kind of news announcement in the other direction, and I think we might see people piling in. Just like we talked about the soybeans the other day. The soybeans were beaten down. We talked about that, was that Monday, Frankie, I think?
Yes,
that same was kind Monday. Of a situation. Yes, Monday. Monday, we'll cover that tomorrow with Commodity Day. But you know, I'd love to cover it today. We just don't have the time. But the soybeans, we were talking about that on Monday, and I said, "Look, President Trump's behind the soybeans. They're beaten down pretty hard. They're way." And then we just saw a massive rally in the soybeans the last couple of days. All right, and then we get President Trump speaking in again today at 1 o'clock. Okay, so let's get through some of these headlines. We've got Trump warns Putin. That was part of that Kennedy his speech yesterday. We talked a little bit about that. Let me see if there's anything else I wanted to add to this. We have, yeah, let's go ahead and take a look at this. I've got a couple things I want to show on that. Okay, here we go. All right, so here's the summit, right? The opening position. So the U.S. is looking for a ceasefire, recognizing Crimea and land control. Who's going to get what, right? There's going to be some agreed to land swap. So there's no doubt that Russia, if something comes about here, Russia is going to get some of the land that they've basically occupied and taken from the Ukraine, quote unquote, Ukraine, you know, borders. Russia, you know, looking at demilitarization, lifting sanctions, and no NATO. Well, I think that's a big call because NATO just went from 1.6% of the Europeans contributing 1.6% of their GDP all the way up to 5%. So I don't think we're going to see no NATO, right, Frankie? That's a big bill.
Big bill.
That's a big bill. That's a big ask right there. Okay, and then Ukraine says no territory give ups, full withdrawal, and reparations. So we can see, obviously, these guys aren't, it's not a perfect alignment here, right? The three circles aren't overlapping all that much. But the one thing they are overlapping with is the death, right? President Trump doesn't want the death. Russia's got to be getting hit pretty hard in terms of military, because again, we funded what, $300-400 billion between us and Europe into this thing. So, you know, if it wasn't for that, Russia probably wouldn't have had many losses of life. If it wasn't for the drones and all these other things. That's been Ukraine's only real winning thing in this, is that they're getting huge amounts of money from around the world. Otherwise, this thing would have been over pretty quickly. But instead, it's been a drawn out bloody fight. And, you know, it's ugly, right? War is ugly. And that's what President Trump's trying to end. So that's the thing. The death, you know, the fact that they're all getting beaten down. Ukraine's not getting that much more money. We hope, right? We hope that that bloodline, money funnel is coming to an end. To some degree, right? Because we still have,
man, enough. We could go off on no this. More.
Enough.
No more no. weapons. You let Ukraine figure it out. If honestly, everything would be fixed, because right now we have Zelensky who's just on his high horse. Oh, I have all the leverage in the world, while, you know, his entire male population is decimated. But once it gets to a point where he knows that Trump's not going to come back into the fold and say, okay, here's more drones, here's more weapons, here's this. Maybe he'll actually agree to anything with Putin. Maybe, okay, you'll have to take this, you'll have to take that, here's your land, because if not for that, you are going to be eviscerated off the face of the earth. Can't we get to that? You know, we'll see. Sorry, I'm getting a little heated.
And so here's the thing that I think really gets to Russia, okay, is President Trump, I think he found a hot button with India. Okay, all these sanctions that were applied, and there's a lot going on here under the surface. We covered this stuff, I don't know. I think, did we cover it together, Frankie? I think we did. So it would have been this year where, or maybe it was before we started working together, but there was a deal that was made. No, it had to be the last administration, because they made a deal where they basically, all the stuff that they'd taken. So for instance, Russia's got money in banks around Europe, the US, different places, right? It's all part of this global currency transaction that goes on. when you're moving goods around. You just get assets built up in other countries and other banks. Well, we basically seized all that, okay? The West, quote-unquote West, right? We seized all that, and we can't really dip into the actual capital, but they dipped into the gains, the returns on that capital. So what they did is they invested it, and then they started taking that, the investments, the revenues off of that. And I think the number's like $200 billion, so it's a pretty good number that we basically hold of Russia's money, and then their interest off of that, we use that to continue furthering the war, okay? So... So it's not a great situation, right? But this was Janet Yellen and her whole group, right, on the way out the door. They pulled this gig off. Were you going to say something, Frankie?
Well, just a quick, just monitoring the chat and our trolls. We love you, troll. Time double 4000 is asking, Craig, what about the SMR small modular reactors? Those could transform the energy market. And then they just followed up saying, I'm not hearing anything about the biggest solution, the SMRs. So they're curious about that.
SNRs, small nuclear reactors. So we're totally on board with that. The thing is, again, we talked a little bit about this. Rokish has done some, I know he's said, I don't know if he's still in it or not, but he said he was in Oklo, which is one of the foremost leaders on that. And I do think that this is a game changer, right? Oklo and these small nuclear reactors make all the sense in the world. Okay. The question is, how long is it going to take, even if it's a year or two or 3 years, till they get the permitting on this? There's still a little regulatory hurdle to be cleared. So, yeah, we're totally on board with that. I think it's a great solution for really the world. It's just such a great idea, you know? You don't have the wasted – I don't know what the number is, Frankie, but there's a huge waste factor when you just transmit electricity across the power lines. I want to say it's like something crazy. Can you look that up, Frankie, like how much – electricity's lost when it goes across the transmission lines. I want to say it's like 50% or something. Like, it's a big number. Half of it gets wasted. So if you can locate a small nuclear reactor at a site where there's a huge energy demand, that starts to contribute to the lack.
I mean, we never know with Google AI, but they're saying 5%. 5%'s lost.
5% lost. Yeah, I want to say it was bigger than that. I've read some stuff that it's bigger than that. But anyway, so if it's 5%, it's not that big of a deal. But it makes all the sense in the world to locate it near the big energy sources, one way or the other. Okay, so we're on board with that. And anyway, let's keep rolling with this, though. You can see here in the yellow, right, oil and gas revenues are stagnating with Russia. And the reason for this and the projection as to why this is going to continue is because President Trump figured out that India was intaking the Russian oil, refining it, and then selling it. So again, it was probably some sort of a conduit that they'd made an agreement where, okay, India's going to pay back Russia, and China's probably paying back Russia either in one way or another. And so Russia was kind of hanging in there, even though all these sanctions and, they've been stealing Russian assets, But I think this is starting to hit them, okay? And this is what's – I think this is what's bringing Putin to the table. At some point, he's got to realize that, like, they're going to just keep strangling him off. And he knows that President Trump – this is probably the first step of many. He knows he's dealing with some pretty smart people now, okay? That's the problem. I think Putin knows he's met his match to some extent. And he's like, all right, we probably need to open up the gates here and get this thing over with and get some kind of flow of money coming back in here because their banks are starting to get stressed. I mean, we never know exactly what's going on in there. Maybe Air's mommy can tell us this, if she feels like if she's hearing anything about their banking system being stressed, because that's what I'm getting word is that their banking system's getting somewhat stressed. And so again, Putin can't have that happen, right? Everybody's got to keep their people somewhat happy, every leader. So I think this is the big deal here, right, is the oil and gas is getting hit. Okay.
I'm getting better numbers. 8 to 15 is a more realistic number of how much energy is lost in the lines. Just doing that in the background.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Frankie. Awesome. Gotcha. Okay, so there's Trump warns Putin. Bessent says a 50 base. So yesterday, Scott Bessent, our Treasury Secretary, was out making the rounds. He was on Fox Business. He was on the last couple of days. He'll go through these periods where he's negotiating trade deals. You see nothing of him for like a couple of weeks on end. Last couple of days, he's been out like crazy everywhere. CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox, all of them. He was on Bloomberg yesterday, and they were asking him some questions. We're going to run a couple clips off of this, but the big thing is that he's talking about an initial 50 basis point cut, so 0.5%, okay, and then down the road more, all right, up to 100 to 150 basis points, so 1 to 1.5%, right? That brings us way down, okay? This is what President Trump's been talking about, and here he is talking about, first off, other countries having to adjust their prices on the tariffs, and then what we're going to do is we're going to look at what this data manipulation has done to Well, let's do this one first, then we'll come back and talk about this. This is about the tariffs, and it's a pretty good explanation on this from his perspective.
Obviously, the tariff itself is paid at the port, but what if the producer in the other country has lowered their price, the 10, 15, 20%, so that there is no price change with the tariff? And you know, obviously, our largest trade deficit is with China, and China does not have the same profit objective that other Western democracies do. So that is an employment agency, and my view has been that they would continue to eat the tariffs. They are doing that, so I think what we've seen is likely to continue happening. I also think there are probably a lot of corporate margins that got very fat during COVID, and now we're seeing a return to like normal pre-COVID margins.
You see this as some kind of redistribution between corporate America and maybe the consumer, Main Street and Wall Street?
I think you know, this administration's all about Main Street, but Wall Street's hitting a new high. So you know, it's this false equivalency. It's not either or. You know, I tell everyone, I call it parallel prosperity. Wall Street's done great.
Okay. So a couple key things there, right? Again, you know, President Trump's all about, you know, Main Street, not Wall Street. The problem is Wall Street's probably going to benefit as a result of that because they're pretty savvy. They figure out how to adjust quickly and they jump on that bandwagon. Lower rates are going to help them too. It's also going to create bubbles in this system, okay? When you get free money out to these corporations, you get zombie companies, right? They can't survive without low interest rates, right? They don't have a, it's kind of like what happened in China. When he says China's piggybacking off of things, what he's really saying there is what we've been talking about. China sells steel for under the market value. They undercut the market. They create tons of EVs, right? And there's no market for that, right? They're not economy market based. And so what he's basically saying is, in one way or another, they're stealing from the rest of the world, right? China's just flat out subsidizing the stealing of revenues from around the world. And so the world can't make revenues. And so what do? They start running deficits, right? And who's behind all this? I think the globalists are trying to move this money to China because they can control China. Okay. So again, big theory there, lots of stuff. For those of you who I think that triggers enough on that one, right, Frankie? For those of you who've been studying this, you know what we're talking about. We just can't go that deep into it. Okay. So here's Scott Bessent now talking about this is what bad data does, okay? It puts the Fed behind the curve. This is really, really important. This was a kind of sent chills down my spine a little bit because you know this, but to hear it coming from him, it really registers. I think this is an important little clip here.
What if the BLS data had been the higher quality and we'd had those numbers, Jonathan? So if we'd seen those numbers in May, in June, I suspect we could have had rate cuts in June and July. So that tells me that there's a very good chance of a 50 basis point rate cut. And you know, I think you know, President Trump is very good at giving these nicknames. And I think the reason that the Jay Powell gets the nickname too late is because he wants to go into a series of rate hikes. He's not Alan Greenspan, who was very forward thinking. They try to be more data driven, which I think is a mistake, because I think we are going back into an economy like we had in the 90s. So, you know, it's just very old fashioned thinking, but I do think we could go into a series of rate cuts here, starting with a 50 basis point rate cut in September.
Okay, so there's so much to unpack there, but here's what I want to say is, I don't think it's a mistake that there's a coordination between the labor statistics being manipulated and the Federal Reserve being late to the game. Because why? That's what they want, right? And then they want to tell us that they've got it all under control because they have 8,000 economists there that are crunching numbers left and right. Whereas President Trump's like, wait a minute, come on. My gut tells me, I've been in the business world for a while. My gut tells me that this is a scam. I'm sensing a scam. And Frankie and I were talking about this before the show a little bit, you know, about red wine, you know, but the point is, it's like, we don't even know if red wine's good or bad for us. I say this all the time because, you know, 1 minute you get a report on this, 1 minute you get a report on that. Why does that matter? Well, because it's always been about data flowing one direction, right? The data flows from us to them up into these thinkers that we don't know the names of that sit behind the Federal Reserve, that drive the Federal Reserve, okay? And then we get nothing back, right? We never get any information back. That's what President Trump's trying to do for us. He's trying to get us the information back, saying this is a scam. They're ripping us off. It's all part of a scam, right? Narrative control, you know, flows into these 12 central banks. flows up to the central, you know, up to Jerome Powell. Jerome Powell plays, he's a whipping boy. Jerome Powell's not, he's supposed to be the second or third most powerful guy in the world. He's a whipping boy for these globalists, right? He's just a whipping boy, right? That's it. And I just want to call it what it is. So President Trump's trying to just say, look, here's a good old fashioned gut feel. This is a scam, right? And I'm going to tell you it's a scam. And that's why he's attacking the apparatus and not so much Jay Powell. But when Jay Powell gets in the way, he's also got to hit him too. Does that make sense, Frankie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we're seeing it torn down before our eyes, and we're seeing Scott Bessent do a good job. That's why that clip, again, there's the surface level stuff, and then there's the chilling part of it, right, that explains the stuff. All right, Frankie, it looks like we got some data out here.
Oh, let's go.
Let me see if I can get my data up here, too. We can look under the surface.
Looking like 0.9, 0.9, core PPI, expected at 0.2.
Wow.
Wow.
Ooh. That's going to be painful right there. That goes. Now I have to eat the words I just said right there because that's a big number. And so, you know, this goes all the way back against, you know, but we got to call it as it is, right? If we're wrong, we're wrong, and you got to admit it quickly. So again, we were hoping for a 0.2 instead of, or even lower, which then trickles into the CPI data. Okay, so this is good for the dollar, right? Because they're not going to, this is a total claim. This is going to be big talk today, right? Just get ready for this, right? This is fire. This is two trains going at each other at 100 miles an hour. You know, where do they meet, right? And what's the collision that happens there? Because again, we were seeing all these good data reads on this stuff. And now all of a sudden, the PPI number comes in super strong like this. Now we want to look under the hood and see what's driving this. Because again, it might, you know, there might be a knee-jerk reaction here and then it sort of reverses itself. But the this is a bad number, right? For what we were just talking about, right? That jobs was the real thing they could focus on because the inflation was tame. Remember, the Fed has two mandates: price stability, jobs, right? Maximum employment. The jobs part was starting to come into focus. The inflation, the price control was actually being somewhat stable. This blows that to shreds. That's why this is a big number, right? It blows that component of it to shreds. Now Jerome Powell can come out, circle the wagon, say, see, we told you so. This is what our 8,000 economists are doing. And President Trump's got to be like, all right, how am I going to cover my tracks on this one? All right. So again, I still believe in what I just said. The problem is the number doesn't look good, right, for that story. You know, it would have been great with a number, then it all flows together. But I still think the concept's there, and I still think that's what's going on with the narrative. Nothing changes from that perspective. It's just this is a really bad read, and this is going to be big, big talking points for today. Markets had a pretty decent reaction off of that. Okay. All right. And then I think we're good there. Let's take a look at some charts. What do you think, Frankie? Ooh,
let's go.
All right, let's chart it up. So let's go back, take a look. I haven't seen. Okay, so this hit our S&P a little bit. So the S&P got to the 7/8 yesterday, right? We've been talking about this harmonic structure, right? We're now at the 7/8. We're looking at the bright green line. That would complete the harmonic, okay, where that green line's at and the long purple shaded boxes up, rectangles at up there. So we see the S&P get to the 7/8 yesterday. We get a retest this morning. Let me switch over to this so we can keep it consistent. I'll put another ellipse in here. Let me do that. Okay. All right. Okay, so we get another retest at that 7/8, and now this market's coming off that number, okay? It's going to be a big hit. Let's go over and take a look at the NASDAQ. Again, we still think that this 65.74 is in focus. This doesn't help our cause, right? A number like a 0.1 this morning or 0.2 or 0.1 might have actually got this S&P going up toward that full upside objective, right? But this puts a delay on things, right? We got to sit and wait again and see if this market can hang on after such a bad read. All right, let's go take a look at this NASDAQ. So here we can use the NASDAQ, right? NASDAQ's above its 7/8, right? Got up there yesterday, tested its 7/8 again for the third time, right? Back in here, it tested it. Okay, it tested it back in here, and then we got a test there. And another test there yesterday, it blew through, okay, and now it's coming back in to retest it. So now let's see if the NASDAQ can actually hold this 7/8, all right? If it holds this 7/8, then there's a good chance it can actually get up to its full upside objective here at 24,165. So we're very close. And you could say, did we essentially get it here? You know, you can make, again, this is what I want to see it get there. I want to truly see it get all the way there. You could say, let me put this in a different color so you can see. I'm going to put this in green. So you can see that green box that I put up there, that's a gap between where we got the high and the full upside objective. I'd love to see at least the NASDAQ get there to see what it does there. And then maybe we get a reversal. Let's hope we don't get hung short here. and we don't get clarity, right? I just, it's kind of like, you know, you want to see something come to its, you know, all the way play out, you know, then at least you can make a decision. Right now it's being left short and it's very frustrating. So let's hope that this thing can hold, make a run at that. What's going to turn it around today? You know, that's the big question. Okay. Maybe a headline, who knows? All right. Okay. Let's look at this the Dow. This is what really has me concerned, is the fact that with all that work being done by the S&P and the NASDAQ, where we had these harmonic structures, the Dow didn't have that, and it hasn't participated in new highs, right? You can see the two red spots I have on there as big red flag areas. Dow's not participating in this rally. Red flag, red flag, red flag, okay? Now let's take a look at, let's go look at the debt market. I want to look at this real fast. Let's look at this is going to crush the 30-year or the 10-year note. You can see the reaction off that data right here. Okay, you can see it went straight back down, but now it came back to this trend line right against this. So again, we have a couple things that can keep these markets hanging on. Again, bad data read. This isn't going to help the markets out in this pursuit, but this is when you have to step in sometimes, right? When it's scary, you get a bad read like that, you get your pullback. This is sometimes the only chance you get. So if you're looking at buying this 10-year, maybe that's an entry point. There's so much I could talk about on this 10-year note. We could spend a ton of time on this right now. There's so much going on under the surface with these debt markets, and I think the best way to sum it up is to look at Japan, right? So let's take a look at the Japanese currency. Let me just look at this harmonic structure here, so we can get a look at this on the 10-year note. All right, we've seen some progress on this thing. This thing's been hanging out forever. We've had this signal for a long, long time. You know, it's just dragging on and dragging on and dragging on. And this is really those two trains coming together, the Federal Reserve, President Trump, right? And the question is, who's going to win? And, and again, everything looked good for President Trump until this data print, all right? And now we're going to see how it handles the speed bump. That being said, we'll see if this 10-year note can continue to move up. That means yields coming down. That's what President Trump wants, right? That's what Scott Bessent wants, right? That's what we're even going to see Rick Rieder of BlackRock is pushing for here in a second. Okay, so that's a 10-year note. I want to just cover this because we haven't covered this in a while. I want to look at this Japanese yen. Right, here's a bigger picture. This is a daily chart on the Japanese yen. Japan's in trouble, all right? They have terrible leadership. They have Ishiba lost an election, you know, or his party loses a lot of power about a month ago, okay? He's a weak leader. Then we have the Bank of Japan, Ueda, okay, who leads their kind of like their Jerome Powell, right, Ueda. He leads the Bank of Japan. Scott Bessent was out saying yesterday, Japan needs to start raising rates, all right? Now, why would he do this? This is the question. Why is Bessent hitting Japan now with this information? Is it to get them to raise rates? If they do that, they're going against the grain with the rest of the world, okay? It compromises their economy. Why is he saying this? They need to control their inflation. So how do you do that? You raise rates, right? Japan has a runaway inflation problem and probably a stagnant growth situation. So they have what's called stagflation. They're not growing very well, and they have this inflation situation. So Jerome Powell is telling, or not Jerome Powell, Scott Bessent is telling them, you probably need to start raising your rates, but it's against the grain of the rest of the world. It's not a comfortable spot, especially for weak leadership, right? Ueda and Ishiba are very weak leaders, and not the kind of guys that can go against. They're not like, you know, Paul Volcker in the 80s, who's big, tough guy, and he could take on the world. Or like a President Trump, right, who can carry a lot on his shoulders. These guys don't seem to be like that. So this is a big issue for Japan. The other thing that Scott Bessent could be saying that for is to make the U.S. dollar weaker, right? That's a long story unto itself. We try to save those conversations for Mondays when we talk about currency. Or it's simply to give a nod to the rest of the world that the Fed does not have full control, okay, over global bond yields, right, like they have had in the past. And the world's starting to fragment. Okay. And that's what we're seeing. And we're looking for this sovereign debt crisis, right? A sovereign debt crisis either starts in Europe, starts in Japan, potentially even starts in China, right? We're seeing signs of that. And how does that roll over to other parts of the world regionally? And then how does it roll over to the whole world, right? Does it become a global bond crisis and not just a sovereign debt crisis? Okay. That's the big concern. So there's a lot going on with currencies, a lot going on with debt. The Japanese yen and the bond market are going to tend to move together, right? So if the Japanese yen goes up, so is the 10-year note. So that's why we watch these things. We haven't covered that in a little while, but we used to do that a lot, all right, in here. But we'll have to get back to that stuff. Okay. All right. All that being said here, Frankie, let's switch gears here a little. Well, let me just pound through. Let's make sure we get through our headlines here.
Let me, I could use this for a quick ad break.
Perfect.
Get a little breather for you, pal. And let the people know access denied. You need to be authorized to perform this action. Well, never mind. Thanks, Rumble. Let's try that again.
We still have one, or did we lose it?
Yeah, it's giving me some issues. All good. Back to you.
Okay, all right. All right, so let's get through the rest of these headlines. Let me just push this some button there.
Nobody saw nothing.
All right, let me see why we're getting that. Okay. All right, let me get through this stuff real fast, get caught back up to there.
Boom, boom. Rive.
All right.
Live.
Just to your note, we talked about that. U.S. Again, we could spend a ton of time on these bond yields. We can't take the time because we got to get to this housing to some degree today. Japanese yen moving. We talked just a little bit about that. Just things we need to be aware of. When stuff really starts to hit, we'll get on that for sure. But things are moving. Things are moving. China's central government buying homes. This is what we've been talking about. Some kind of a stimulus package out of China. This has given us signs that China's weak. Okay, Japan's weak. China's weak. Government doesn't know what to do. Again, we're trying to get a read on what is really going on in these regions. This is why we keep delaying with China, I think. For reasons like this, let them deal with their own problems. Don't get in the way of your enemy when they're destroying themselves, okay? Bitcoin rises to a record, risk on, all right? Red flag to me. I know there's a lot of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency lovers in here. I'm getting very concerned because it hit 125,000 for Bitcoin. Again, it's another one of those big psychological levels. 100,000, 125, 150, 200. Those are big psychological levels. What's going on here? Are we getting to a top in the stocks? Are we getting to a top in the Bitcoin? They tend to be correlated. We saw a little bit of a divergence from those two moving together for a little while, and then they went right back to moving together again. Okay, so again, the correlation hasn't broken down. Watching Bitcoin is part of this whole thing. And then I think we're good. We'll come back to the housing market in a second. All right, Frankie. Well, let me show this. I want to show this market psychology, and then we're going to run a couple of these things from Rick Rieder from BlackRock. Okay, so here's what we have, right? This is kind of the emotional cycle that people go through in the markets, right? When a market's bottomed out, okay, and when it's coming down, you're kind of dealing with hope, and the media will pump hope at you, okay? So markets go up on a wall of worry, and they come down based on hope. Okay, so just kind of let that soak in. After hope comes optimism. After optimism comes belief, right? You start to believe. That becomes a pretty good trading area, right? In that green, I have that thing listed as, you know, advancing profitable trading, right? You can kind of get behind a trend, right? At that point, the trend, there's some kind of something you can grab onto with the beginning threads of a trend, okay, when you hit that point three, the belief, and you get a little bit of choppy movement, and then you start to get in, right before you get into the thrill mode, right, you start getting advances. People are getting new highs. They're like, hey, this is great. We're breaking in new highs. We're breaking in new highs. Our lows are getting higher too, right? So you start to get the thrill. Then you get into a euphoric period, and the market starts to top out. A lot of different types of tops. You can get V-tops. You can get sideways tops, all kinds of stuff. You get complacency. Complacency. Hang on to that word. Rick Rieder talks about complacency, right? Complacency, complacency. Can you remind me, Frankie? Can you say that twice for me? Complacency.
Complacency. That's what I got to do when I meet new people. I'm bad with names, so. Complacency.
All right, complacency. Hang on to that word because you're going to hear Rick Rieder say that exact same thing. Okay, then we get into anxiety. Market starts to go down. You get 8, denial. 9, panic. 10, capitulation. 11 is anger. 12 is depression. 13 is disbelief. And then you roll right back into hope. Round and round and round we go. Okay, with that, I'm going to skip these other ones. Let's go ahead and run this one, Frankie, here on Rick Rieder talking about, let's run this again, right? The best ever market. All right, let's hit this one. The one we ran to open.
I tell you, you sent me an email earlier. I had to do a double take. You said this is the best investment environment ever.
I think that.
You mean that?
I do, because, and by the way, it doesn't mean necessarily everything's going up, but there's a couple of things at play that are pretty extraordinary. First of all, if you take the equity side, first of all, the technicals and equities are crazy. I know we've talked about it before. Amount of cash on the sideline, the amount of buybacks relative to the IPO calendar, i.e. the demand versus supply, is pretty extraordinary.
Okay, so now what we have is, right, best ever market. Okay, now we have a clip from him saying he's almost sure that we're going to get 100 basis point rate cut. Now, today's number is going to put even a dent in his thinking here, right? That number this morning changes the game, okay? But here's Rick Rieder talking about almost for sure they're going to do 100 basis points of cuts, 1%.
And I think they can cut. I think it's almost a given that they cut. And, you know, particularly if you get a payroll report that shows what has heretofore happened, you're seeing some sogginess around job hires, around job openings. that I think the Fed's got. You've got more slack coming into the labor market, so I think they can move. Listen, I still think the funds rate, you can get it down faster and more aggressively than where they are today. You're talking about, you know, the inflation report today. Mm-hmm. You're still talking about there's a little bit of elevation from tariffs, which I think you have to be respectful of, and I think the Fed's been respectful of that. But you're still running under 3% core CPI, and things like shelter, you're starting to see some improvement in. I think they've got room. You talk about 5-year inflation break-evens at 2.5%. I think you got room to get that funds rate down 100 basis points. Why?
So there's some stuff talked about in there that's a little bit like, you know, things that you may or may not have understanding about. Don't worry about that. The big thing is that he's with Scott Bessent on the lowering of interest rates. Here's one of the biggest investors in the world, right? I don't know how you really equate, you know, these Scott Bessent used to be kind of in his position when he was working for Soros, right? Same kind of a function. Now he's working for the U.S. government as the Secretary of Treasury. He's saying lower interest rates for one reason. Rick Reeder is saying it for another reason, but again, same theory, right? We're moving in this direction, lower interest rates, okay? Now here's what he says. This is what lowering rates does to the housing market and low-income earners.
The interest rate tool is not that important, except for a couple of big factors. What it does to housing, and you look at mortgage applications, building permits, housing starts, new home sales,
frozen,
stuck. The mortgage rate has to come down. You drop the funds rate, you know, there's some yield curve steepening that probably happens. And then the other side of it is, A, the low-income people who are the borrowers, you're actually, you know, they are getting hurt by this. Wait, you know, high savings, older people are actually benefiting from the high rates. And the last thing that I will say, I don't think the funds rate has to be at 4 3/8. The cost to the government, we have too much debt in this country to charge an extra 100 basis points. When I think the transmission of how it impacts inflation that I think is dull to start with, is it worth it? It's a pretty high price to pay.
So in here, what we've shown is multiple times we've shown this little chart of, you know, all the different presidents and where we were coming into President Trump 2.0. Okay, and if we don't get interest rates down, it's the interest on that debt that's going to just completely compound things out of control and basically throw us off a cliff. Okay, so that's kind of what he's saying, that we need to lower interest rates for the government too. Fixed income earners, like, you know, retirees who have loved this for the last couple of years, right? These higher rates, you know, it's great. They can go to the bank, they can get a CD, they can go get, you know, they can actually get paid for having saved their whole lives, right? The problem is housing suffering on the other side of this, okay? So that's what he's saying. They need a lower interest rate for housing. And lowering interest rates doesn't have an impact on a lot of these other things, but it does have an impact on those two things. One, the interest that the government pays on debt, okay? President Trump and Scott Bessent are looking to restructure this debt out longer term at lower interest rates, just like you would. You could get lower interest rates on a 30-year mortgage, you'd stretch it out, right? If not, you're gonna have to live in the shorter. I'll leave it at that, right? The point is this, we got the two things, housing and the government debt. Those are the two big things they're focused on, right? Now, remember though, here's the thing, Frankie. I know this has got to be going across your mind. Who was trying to buy up all the single family homes from us?
BlackRock.
During this whole period of time?
BlackRock. And Vanguard. Exactly. Guard. And State
and
Street.
Vanguard.
Thank
yeah,
you.
So all these guys, right? So, yeah. So I think we, as good people, want to forgive pretty quickly, okay? But this is not the time, right, to be forgiving BlackRock, right? This is a time to be thinking about sticking it to these scumbags, okay? Once a scorpion, always a scorpion, all right? And so here's the thing. They want to suck your money out of these money market funds, okay, at a possible top, complacency, okay? He's going to even mention to you here in a second complacency, right? They're setting it up to come after your 401ks too, right, as part of their exit strategy. That's part of this private equity thing we need to get into. We're going to cover that tomorrow, okay? So again, it's all a big lie, right? This really just infuriates me. Here he talks about, he knows COVID. This guy knows COVID was a scam, right? And just listen to what he has to say here. This just blows me away.
We, you know, I sent you over this chart. I don't know if you saw that chart that shows, other than a pandemic, a once in 100-year dynamic, inflation, volatility of inflation, for the last 25 years is incredibly low. We don't run an economy that's manufacturing, commodity-oriented. It's not cyclical. Mm-hmm. Volatility of inflation is incredibly low, and we're seeing enhanced productivity. But I'm not that worried if the Fed drops the rate that all of a sudden we're going to see inflation pick up.
Okay, so the guy looks good, he talks smooth, right? He's an Ivy Leaguer, right? He's all smart, okay? it's time to stick it to these scumbags. This is the point in time, right? You know, that's the bottom line. All right, now, here he talks about the complacency, right, Frankie? This is why we said complacency like 10 times. He says it himself right here. Let's roll this one.
Calls on this show. Nothing scares you?
Like, listen, what I like the
valuation?
Couple,
no, I mean, you defend growth. Yeah. You're not worried about tariffs.
So I would say, I'll tell you what I'm most worried about, complacency. Like, it's, I mean, so think about the vol we're buying today. Like, people are selling us insurance, and people, you know, think about the way markets work, the way insurance works. Nobody buys insurance when you're far from the hurricane. They buy it right after when the price is too high. Today, the price of insurance is incredibly cheap. We can hedge our portfolio. Complacency is high. You see it in some of the credit markets. That being said, you know, I think, A, I'm sanguine on the economy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're moving generally in the right direction. Listen, one of the reasons why this is a great investment environment, there's a lot of news flow that allows you to take advantage of opportunities. Markets, particularly in August, they tend to overreact to things. So your ability to actually take advantage of that. But complacency to me today, I'd love multiple to be a little bit lower, to be honest. And I think, I know, like, spreads to be a little bit wider in the credit markets. But I, boy, you see the where the technicals are, where the amount of cash, we were looking at it, amount of money that's gone into money market funds, including last week, is extraordinary. Some of that is going to move into equities and other fixed income and other assets.
We have.
Okay, so I go back to this. What's at the top? Euphoria and complacency. Euphoria is the AI boom, okay? Again, just like the tech bubble was, right? Again, when you're spending that kind of money, there's going to be mistakes in the AI space. We're starting to see, we talked about that yesterday. We're starting to see a few of these little companies stumble because they're going to get caught in the, they're going to get caught in this steamroller, okay? They're going to get caught. There's going to be small, there's going to be people that get steamrolled in this AI boom. And then here he is telling you complacency. Where is that? It's in a topping pattern, okay? He's telling you straight up, if you know what he's talking about and you can sort yourself through this, he's telling you you're at the top, right? I mean, he's telling you. All right, Frankie, as a new investor, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it was also interesting to me where he was basically like, you know, with all the news cycles and going on and this market going up, he's basically saying, like, you know, all we talk about, or a lot of what we talk about, Craig, is just how Bloomberg and all these different media organizations just get the masses in hysterics and they just get this market going up, down, left, right, center. And he's literally pointing it out. He's like, yeah, look, it's a great time. You know, there's so much going on in the news. It's going here, there. It's like we're being dragged like a dog, just left, right. Just do it. Just do it. Give us the truth, pal. Just give us the truth.
Yeah. I mean, so they're laughing at us, right? Essentially, do you feel like he's almost laughing at us, Frankie?
Yeah.
Right. And so, again, we want to forgive. He looks like a nice guy. Right. He's smart. You know, oh, Rick Rieder, you know, he seems like a nice guy. Right. Kind of, you know, I could be buddy. I could have a beer with this guy. You know, that kind of this guy. These guys are going to cut you off at the knees. Right. They're scorpions. Right. He's telling you we're trading all around it. We want to get your money out of those market funds. We know we're going to get it in there because we control the narrative. We're going to get you in this private equity because we got to get out. We need an exit strategy. Right. We're going to bring you into that whole fold. They don't tell you, hey, we're going to make private equity available to you. The headline coming out of Bloomberg is private equity coming to your 401k. They're ordering it into your 401k. They're demanding it go into your 401k. They're not asking you, right? So again, scorpions will be scorpions, all right? Here's a housing market data. Let me see if I can just go straight to this because we're getting cut off. Okay, there we go. We have the NAHB. We go through this data, right? Here's the takeaway. Just look down the middle column, right? There's a couple beats in green. This is from last month, July, okay, housing data. Building permits beat by a little bit, 1.39 million to 1.4, slight beat. Housing starts beat by, what, 30,000 or something, 1.29 to 1.32. Existing home sales was negative. New home sales was negative. S&P Case-Shiller, 20 cities that they look at, negative. Pending home sales, negative, right? Pending home sales was down quite a bit, 0.2 to minus 0.8. Construction spending, 0 to minus 0.4. He's telling us it's the greatest investment market ever, Frankie, right? Well, yeah, for them, because, again, they're going to see a bunch of defaults, and what are they going to do? They're going to come in and pick up the scraps on us, right? They're going to get out of this. They're going to dump this stuff on your 401k. They're going to dump this stuff wherever they can, and they're going to watch the market come down. He told you he's taking out insurance, right? They're buying insurance because right now it's cheap to buy. They're going to take out insurance. Market's going to fall. Okay, and then what are they going to do? When they're sitting there and you're sitting there like, I'm losing my house, what are they going to do? They're going to come in with all that insurance they bought, and they're going to swoop up your house, right? He's telling you exactly how it's going to unfold, right? And they're going to take you through the cycle. President Trump's trying to fight against that, I think, in every way possible. But again, there's a lot of, They're in a battle, right? We're in a war, and the world doesn't even see it, right? We're in an economic war, and if you can't see that through the tariffs, if you can't see that we're in an economic war, that's what we're here to do, is try to point that out, right, and try to make our claim on that stuff. All right, we've got two more clips here, Frankie. I think we got time to run one. This is Rick Reeder from about a week or two ago, and he's talking about this is him talking about cutting rates with stocks at highs and how you can still do it. A little bit older data, but still, I think, valuable here.
So it's pretty extraordinary. I mean, it almost never happens in time. So there are a couple things happen. First thing, I think all financial assets, there's an extraordinary amount of cash and money that has to flow somewhere. And the technicals in equities are great because companies are buying back their stocks. So I think the equity market is reflecting really good technicals. Earnings have been pretty good. But I think there's something different at play in terms of inflation. What's going to happen with productivity and innovation, inflation is going to come down. And the reason to bring interest rates down, which I'm a believer in, is the housing market is under pressure. So the real impact of interest rates on the economy today, I don't think it is in the historic sectors of who spends on CapEx, you think about AI spend, how the banks manage the risk. It's about housing. And today, if you look at the housing market, and particularly what impacts lower income, the people that borrow today are lower income, and they're adversely infected by where these rates are. If we get the rate down, you actually can bring home prices down, you build more houses, you'll actually reduce inflation. So I think it's quite consistent to bring the interest rate down, even though the economy is operating at a pretty good level. Where we're going is to a lower level of inflation, and I think we can bring it down.
So that's an interview with Bloomberg, right? That's for us to consume. What do you think he's saying in the morning when he's got his investment meetings, Frankie? What do you think that guy looks like while he's sitting around the room with all of his traders and all of his right-hand guys and all of his AI, ChatGPT, experts, right, that are extracting information from the markets? You think he's like sitting there saying, guys, this is our big chance. We're going to screw these people. We're going to put it to them. You think that's what's going on, Frankie? Can you just put yourself in that boardroom and that analysis room in the morning. You think that's what's going on? Or do you think he's that nice? You think he's that calm and cool?
Yeah, right. This guy probably gets a new secretary every day because he gets the wrong coffee. You could just, and I've mentioned it before, I'm Italian, I talk with my hands, but there's something about people lying and just constantly look at the housing market right here. You see this? And what are you looking at? Like, stop. You could just tell. It's just so ingenuous. It's a joke. These people are evil.
And here he is, one more clip talking about room to bring down rates. Again, this is a little bit older. This is recorded a week, I think, not this last, either this last weekend or the weekend before, but over one of the weekends. Again, it's one of those, like, hey, come on in. Everything's good. It's nice and warm in here. Welcome. Come on in. It's one of these feel good things, right? So here he is talking about bringing rates down even more.
When you think about inflation break evens today, depending on which part of the curve, are 2.5 to 2.75. So the funds rate, even if you bring it down to 3.25, you're still above the rate of inflation. So I think we got plenty of room to drop it, even though the economy is operating well.
Okay, fair enough. Good analysis. That's okay. Again, back to these charts, right? I just want to go back to this real fast. And let's look at this, the harmonics on this. Let's go back. Okay, so where did the NASDAQ settle in? So again, we get a bad print, right? We're not quite at the bright green line. We come back to the 7/8, okay, the light blue line right there. And let me just mark this so you can see, okay, right there, that purple, that's what we're looking at, right? Let me change that to orange just to make sure everyone can see this. Let me change it to pink. That'll make it bright. So that's where we're at. That's the 7/8 where I put that pink line over that light blue line, right? That's at 23,827. The NASDAQ's coming back into that level, the 7/8. Can it hold there? It stopped it, right? The market screamed down to that level and it held. So can that 7/8 hold? If it does, then there's a decent chance we're going to make a run up to this bright green line and we get to see what happens there. We get a fair look, right? Instead of leaving it short. I hope we don't get hung short here, right? I hope we get a chance to see what it does at that level. Just like we watch down here at the dark green level, right? We watch this halfway. Market gets up to it, holds, goes above it, comes back, retests it. Goes up, comes back, comes all the way back and retests it back in here, and then it rallies and we're getting close to the full upside objective here. Same thing on this S&P, right? We're watching to see, can this thing climb above the 7/8? Okay, that thing, let me change that to brighter color as well. Okay, can it climb above that 7/8 and make it run to that bright green line? Again, I know it sounds like they're going to pump you full, all right? They're going to pump you full of information, right? Make you feel good. They got to create euphoria, right? That's what the narrative's about. Let me go back to this one more time, right? They got to get number five, right? They got to get euphoria. They got to get you to take your money out of your money market fund. They got to get you to take, they got to exit. They got to get someone to buy that stuff from you, right? That's what they're going to do, right? They got to create that euphoria. That's what you're going to see over the coming, if you see, let me just put it this way. If you see euphoria, heads up, be awake, right? Be awake, right? Because this is what they're doing to you, okay? And then before you know it, they're going to have you down at 11 and 12, right? Anger and depression, okay? That's where they're going to take you, right? This guy is a scorpion. This is BlackRock. These are the people we've come to not love, all right? Don't forget that. All right, Frankie, I think we're out of time.
Look at us. Perfect timing. We're out, right? I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I just want to say to everyone that's watching this, we're on at 8 a.m. every single day. And after the show's over, this all-day stream goes on forever, right, till 11 p.m. all day. But I just want to let everyone know, if you do have any questions for us specifically to answer tomorrow's show, just go to the solo stream that'll be available after this is done, right? And then just ask the question as a comment, because then we can go back and answer any questions for y'all. All right. There we go.
All right. Have a blessed day, everyone. Jeremy Harrell's up next with Rise Up. See you tomorrow.